हरि
सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सहधेयं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 29, Sutra 138. Bhuma samprasadad adyuparishat. Bhuma, the Bhuma, sampradashat, then the jiva who is the object of the Lord's mercy, adhi, greater, upareshat, because of the teaching. Bhuma refers to the Lord because the text states that he has a form of bliss, and his teaching comes at the end of the highest teaching. Sri Govindavasya. Vishaya, being asked by Narada, Sanat Kumar instructed him concerning the name. You should inquire about Bhuma, he said. Teach me about Bhuma. You should inquire about Bhuma, he said. Teach me about Bhuma, O saintly one. Bhuma is where one sees nothing else, hears nothing else, and knows nothing else. When one sees something else, hears something else, or knows something else, one knows something insignificant or small. Chandogya Upanishad 7:23, 1-24, 1. Serious.
So Bhuma is a stage?
Bhuma is how you say it? So do we, what before was the definition? The great?
That's the same.
Yes. Because this would be your main verse that you're dealing with here.
I just don't understand if this is the stage or a person or...
No. It means it's all of that. That's the point. If you see anything else, then...
So what are we arguing about then?
Who Bhuma is.
No, that's my question.
It means all-pervading.
Bhuma is Krishna?
Yeah, means that it means seeing, being fully aware of the Lord. Fully conscious of the Lord. You could say it's a stage, but it's also, see, it's just like the name. Is the name the process or is the name the goal? Or, you understand? So when it, meaning everything means sees nothing else, so you don't see anything not connected to the Lord, right? Hears nothing else, you don't hear about anything except for its connection with the Lord, and that's the only way you understand it. Knows nothing else, you don't know anything except for its connection to the Lord. So it's not that it's a particular body of knowledge or that it is the body of, it is knowledge. You know, it is the Lord, like that. So if one sees something else, means sees something not connected to the Lord, then hears or knows something, one knows something insignificant or small. Because if you're hearing something separate from the Lord, its separateness is its smallness. Because that's its mundane. So mundane means small. You know, just like a drop of water in the desert, it's small.
Then can we say that the one who doesn't see or is not aware of the Lord, he's not aware of Bhuma, or he's not on the stage of Bhuma, or he's not Bhuma?
Well, he'll never be Bhuma, because Bhuma is the Lord. We're Jiva. That's what we're separating.
Okay.
Is that Bhuma and the Lord are different. I mean, that Jiva and the Lord are different.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So Bhuma means the Lord, everything. You know, all his all means all three features. It means the emphasis we can see from this is on the first and second.
Second also.
Huh? No, second also. Why Paramatma is not everywhere? He's not everything? Yeah, so in other words, it's the Lord in all three phases. Right? Like that. So depending on your realization, it may be here, it may be there. So someone who's, let's say like Sukadev Goswami is on the platform of seeing everything is Brahman. So he's on this platform of Bhuma. But on that Brahman level, then someone else in Paramatma, then in Bhagavan. But at this point, you don't see anything not connected to the Lord.
So, yeah. So Bhuma is the word which can be used for Bhagavan as well as for the Jiva.
No, Bhuma is not used for the Jiva. That's the whole point of this thing.
Bhuma is in the sense that the position on which a particular devotee is, on which realization, either Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, in that sense.
Just, we would just say, yeah. It's more about the Lord, and we see like that. So then you can say that someone is self-realized. If you're self-realized, then you can understand like this. So you're God-conscious. So, okay. Yes.
Would it be correct in saying that this is, as per the Japa Shloki, the Krishna saying that know everything as me, and anything separate from me considered up to me?
Yes, that's there. That's there. So that means that you're looking at the first and second, but it's also that he's beyond that, so that you can see that, and that you're doing all. So it's like all four at once. But it's basically, in this case, it's talking about the Lord himself, not as much about the process, but about the Lord. What means, what is the topic of what you hear, what you see, what you know? So it's the Lord. But it's not that it's not the process also, because the Lord is everything. So, yeah. Here, Bhuma does not refer to numerical quantity, many, but to great pervasiveness or largeness of form. Mm-hmm. This can be inferred from the statement that seeing something else is insignificant or small. Therefore, an object possessing the quality of largeness is indicated because it must be the opposite of a small object. So, the focus in here is how to separate it from the jiva. Mm-hmm. Means that the jiva is not this. Not that the jiva, of course, in another aspect is not part and parcel of this. But the point is when we say bhuma, it does not mean the jiva. Mm-hmm. So that's generally why we would not refer to it as, you know, let's say, that level of consciousness. Because then we're indicating more the jiva in this case.
Yeah. So bhuma and bhumiya.
Yeah, probably in all at pervasiveness, Bhumi is very big. But here it's referring to Bhuma, meaning that it's bigger. Like that. Jiva is smaller, Bhuma is bigger. Okay, so now the doubt. In Shamshaya, here's the doubt. Is Bhuma the prana or Vishnu? Like, his prana is also pervading everywhere. Purvapaksha. Because previously in the same text it was said, prano va ashaya bhuyan. Prana is better than hope. 7:15:1. And there was no question or reply. Bhuma must be prana. Prana refers to the jiva who is accompanied by prana. It does not mean the modification of air element called prana. The section begins with, Tarati shokam atmavit. The knower of atma surpasses lamentation. 7:13. And ends with atmata evedam sarvam. All of this is from atma. Therefore, the word bhuma in the middle of the section means the jiva, right? But they're also taking atma as jiva. But we've already established that atma is not, in this case, is not jiva, right? Because of the all-pervading aspect. Yes.
How do they continue their argumentation if they have already been established at the foundation of Buddha? So how would it be possible to still continue the premise? Wouldn't they just come up with a different premise?
How do you say? What's the tenth offense to the holy name?
Okay.
Moving on.
Okay, we drop. Okay. It's just attachment. That despite knowing what's right and what's wrong, you're still attached to what you want it to be. That's why it's called illusion. You know, because it's not what we want it to be. It is what it is. Right? So, isn't that what God said? I is what I is.
I is what I is.
Yeah.
You done did good.
Yeah. Does that make sense? So, that's the whole thing is the from Shastra, then we can understand what reality is. Otherwise, we have our own idea of what it is. But it's not that. So we're trying to get to this understanding of Bhuma, that he is everything. He's the total. And then one who understands this comes to that transcendental position. Right? But if one doesn't understand this, that means then one is thinking about something that is temporary. So therefore is small. Maybe large in size, but it's actually small in value. Does that make sense? Yeah. Therefore, the word Bhuma in the middle of the section means the jiva. The description of, quote, where one sees nothing else, end quote, fits the jiva, for there is elimination of seeing, etc., during deep sleep, when the senses enter prana. It is said, yo vai bhuma tat sukham, bhuma is bliss. 7.23.1. This is not contradictory for the jiva for the jiva says, I slept happily in deep sleep. After discerning that Bhuma refers to the jiva, the remaining descriptions of Bhuma can be made to align favorably to this. Right? So once you adjust it to how you like, then everything naturally fits. You know, it's just like once you establish that you're the you're the supreme, then everything else is socially it fits in very nicely, right? It all just works, right? So that's the thing. I slept happily in deep sleep. So that it's just saying is that this point of that is bliss. So if that's their bliss, then why don't they just work on, you know, sleeping better? You know, you have the laughing guru, you have all these, why don't they have the sleeping guru, right? Everyone just gets together and falls asleep, you know, and then afterwards, wow, that was great, you know, yeah.
I've been to some japa times, you know.
That's another thing, but that's spontaneous. Oh. We're talking here about, because it's gyan, it has to have that
balance.
Intellectual process. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's it. Don't mix these levels of realization, right? You know, like that. Okay, yeah. Okay, Siddhanta. Bhuma samprasadad adhyupadeshat. Bhuma refers to the Lord because the text states that he has a form of bliss, and his teaching comes at the end at the end as the highest teaching, right? So jiva can't be the end, because that's the whole point, is that jiva's there, then due to that aspect of illusion, then that's not complete. When it comes to the platform of transcendental understanding, that's at the end. So that's Vedanta, the end of understanding. That then is complete. So that's not the jiva. So that's the problem. They adjust it and then they'll just see everything in that context, but actually it's not saying that. Bhuma is Vishnu, not the jiva endowed with prana. Why? Because it is said in the text that he has a form of great bliss. Yo vai bhuma tat sukham. He who is bhuma has happiness. 7.23.1. And because among all the teachings, this is the highest, coming at the end. Right? So we see that they're quoting exactly the same verses, but getting the other. So now, one approach, if we're working from the mode of passion, right? Because remember, goodness means you know what's right and wrong. Passion means you don't know what's right and what's wrong. You can't tell the difference. It's confusing. And ignorance means you think wrong is right, and right is wrong. Right? So this whole modern concept text of, well, you know, we can't fully understand, we have to look at this, we should discuss, that's mode of passion. Right? It's taken as, oh, this is very intellectual, very broad-minded, very accommodating, very developed, you know, and sophisticated, you know, like this. But actually, it's just mode of passion, yes.
Previously, you also said that mode of passion, you know what you're doing, but you're doing it with the motive, the wrong motive.
Yes, no, but it seems if goodness, passion, ignorance are controlling everything, then there's some variation.
Okay. It's a big variation.
Okay, let us say you have the half a chapati, and it's cut in half, and you've opened it up. Mm-hmm. And there's these funny little balls. Do you put them in whole? Do you break them in half? Can you break them into quarters?
All of those.
Okay, yes, questions. Yes. So there's variety within it. It all means the same thing because they don't know what's right and wrong. So even though the action may be correct and they're getting the particular result that they want due to correct action recommended by Shastra, they don't know what's right because they're actually approaching it from the wrong perspective. So that's where it's, and then if you bring that up, we don't know this and that. So that's always, in other words, if you pull that card, then it's immediately, oh, you cannot, you're not supposed to continue your, they say, you know, you're going after that.
Line of thought, right?
Yeah, it means that you can't, pursue that particular line of thinking that is that they will take as not favorable to themselves. No, but we can't tell. We agree to disagree. These are all just motive passion statements just to push knowledge aside so that it leaves it open for your own interpretation, sense gratification.
And it's presented as if it's objective. If you pursue the point, that means
you're subjective. Yeah. Well, that's the whole point of this. Objectivity is motive passion. Because they don't want to come to a conclusion. Goodness means conclusion.
Sama.
It's Samaveda,
right?
But Samaveda meaning in that it's about the Lord, yes, in that case, like that. But it means that you're...
Conclusion?
Hmm?
Conclusion?
Yes, that's like... Thursday's on third base, yes. And it's leaking. It's kind of like... Okay. So, the point being is that the verses are being used the same. That's what we were discussing.
Yeah.
Was that, now I've heard it said, oh, but this same verse, someone will interpret it this way, someone will that way, so we can't know what's right or wrong and this and that, so what do? They take up the mode of passion and do whatever they like, rather than come to a conclusion. So the point is there is proper interpretation and there's improper interpretation. So that you're getting two different opposing opinions on one verse, that's not strange. You can have more than one. You can have a whole pile of them. Right? That's the meaning of piled high and deep. Right? Yes. Is that you have so many varieties of looking at one thing, but it has because of that objectivity, it has that mode of passion, therefore you can end up with different opinions. Now the point is it in line with the acharyas? Because it's said in the spiritual world there's one perspective. The material world, that we have all the variety of perspectives. Someone said. So we shouldn't think it's strange that the Purvapaksha has used a verse, and then the Siddhanta has used the same verse, and then get confused. Oh, but how's it? If we want passion, Krishna will give us. But he's knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness. So if he gives us that understanding, we can understand it. And if we don't want to understand it, he won't give it to us. Or samprasadad can refer to the jiva. Evam evaisha samprasado smach charirat samutaya. The object of mercy rises from this body. Chandogya Upanishad 8.12.3. Thus the meaning can also be Bhuma means Vishnu, because the Lord has qualities greater than the jiva, who is called samprasadad. Right? So in this way then, you are bringing in, it's about the Lord, or you can also bring in, it's about the Lord because it compares the Lord to the jiva. Right? The jiva has that smaller aspect, and the Lord has the greater aspect. So either way, it comes out meaning the Lord. The meaning is this. Previously, after teaching about the name, Sanat Kumar says, Sa va esha evam pashyan neva man vana evam jigyanan ativadi bhavati. He, seeing this prana, being aware of this prana, and understanding this, becomes ativadi. Chandogya Upanishad 7.15.4. When the word tu is used to make a distinction from becoming an ativadi by worshipping a prana, which was being discussed. The word satya is used to indicate Vishnu. Knowing him, one becomes a true ativadi. He is distinct from prana and can be equated with Bhuma. If prana were Bhuma, then it would not be possible to say in the text that higher than prana is Bhuma. Various objects are considered higher than the previous one mentioned. Higher than name is speech. Higher than prana is Sakya or Bhuma. So it's giving a hierarchy. It's going through. So if you're saying prana is Bhuma, then you can't say that higher than prana is Bhuma. So since that's how it's giving this, right? Well, if we have an Ati Rati. So Ati Rati means someone who is a charioteer or a warrior who can fight with so many warriors. So then if you have an Ati Vadi, then that means someone who, then their knowledge is greater than so many other knowledgeable persons, right? Because if it's wise, so there's so many scholars, but higher than a scholar is someone who's wise. Does that make sense? Because that's realization. So Vigyan is higher than Gyan. So someone on the platform of Vigyan, that would be a Ativadi.
It mentions he is distinct from Prana, and can be. He is distinct from prana. So prana is at a lower level and Bhuma is at a higher level.
Yes.
So we're saying that the Lord is Bhuma and not prana.
Yes.
So repeating the argument over here.
Yes.
Okay.
As well, satya is well known to indicate Vishnu, the Supreme Brahman. Satyam jnanam anantam brahma. The unlimited Brahman is satyam and knowledge. Satyam param dhimahi. Let us meditate on the supreme satya, Vishnu. He is the true ativadi because of the supreme Brahman, satyena. Meditation on prana is superior to meditation on name, etc., up to hope. Compared to those who do not know prana, the worshipper of prana is superior, or ativadi. But meditation on Vishnu is superior. In other words, you're showing the level of, if someone is, how you say, someone who's meditating on a lower level is of less stature than someone who's meditating on a higher level. So, does that make sense? Just like within the modern context, you have an academic. So are they considered in understanding or intelligence superior to the common person? Right? Yes, so we'll call them a scholar. But in reality, how do we define a scholar? One who knows the absolute. Right? So in the same way as amongst those who have knowledge more than someone else, means in other words, of those ativadis, one who knows Vishnu, that's the, as they'll use here, the chief ativadi. Right? So he gets all the How you say? Maybe that's what they mean by feather in the cap, right? Because the chief wears all the feathers. Right?
Is meditational name, is it the holy name or the mundane name that's spoken of?
Well, if it was the holy name, in a sense Vishnu and the holy name are non-different, then
is
there would be...
Is it the name that people meditate on? Meditation.
It's the world of names.
Okay, got it.
Okay? Yeah. And so then when you meditate on that... So in other words, someone who just... how the modes of nature present things only see it that way, then that's just common. But when they start to see it's a world of names, that's a superior position. You understand? Then superior to that is seeing how there's prana, because it's not just dead matter with all these forms, but there's the life force. So that's going to be superior to that. But the most superior is going to be, if you understand, Vishnu.
Can a distinction be made between prana and bhava?
Yeah. In this case, we're just taking prana as life. And bhava then would be a state of consciousness, right, where you're meditating on the Lord. So it's just, it's two different, how you say, context. It seems similar, like a turbocharger, and he's very enthusiastic.
Yet, Bhuma and Prana is said to be aversion, but there's no distinction.
There's no distinction, meaning that the Lord, everything is non different from him, but then it makes the point that there is a difference. He is everything through his energies, and then he is beyond as the Supreme.
Is that where Bhava comes in?
No, it's two different discussions. Like that. It's two different discussions. What you're talking about will come up in the Bhagavatam discussion, because it's taking that angle. Here it's just being that you're conscious of the Lord. Now, if you're conscious of the Lord in devotion, then that will bring you to that stage of Bhava. Like that. Okay? Like that. Yeah.
Compared
to those who do not know prana, the worshipper of prana is superior, ativadi. But meditation on Vishnu is superior. Thus, such a person is the chief ativadi. The ativadi of satya is better than the ativadi of prana. The pupil asks, soham bhagavas satyena tivadani. May I be an ativadi because of satya. The guru responds, satyam tveva viji gyasitavyam. One should desire to know satya. Chandogya Upanishad 97:16:1.
Hmm. Big.
It's big. Chandogya is very big. So, seriously big. One cannot say that because there is no question and answer about something greater than prana. Being an ativadi of prana is the same as being an ativadi of the Lord. The reason is that there is no instruction to equate prana with satya. Right? So there hasn't been anything further, but there's been nothing to connect them either. Right? So there's been no further definition, but there's been no definition to say that it goes on to the highest. It already says there is the highest, but it hasn't indicated that this is the highest. It's just went up to a point. And then the conversation continues. Then later it will go up. But they're just taking the middle point. Does that make sense? One may ask why the disciple does not ask about something higher than prana. The answer is this. In the list of unconscious items starting with name, and ending with hope, it is taught that the latter term is superior to the former. The knower of these is not called an ativadi by the teacher. He then teaches about prana, which means the jiva. So right, first you just understand that there is a field of knowledge. Otherwise, if we don't even know it exists, how we'll study it. Right? So then that is being taught. So you have to stand there, but just because you've heard that doesn't put you on that platform. Because you've just heard that it exists. He then teaches about prana, which means the jiva. The nor of jiva is called an ativadi. The pupil thinks that this is the final teaching. Therefore, he does not ask about anything higher. The teacher, not accepting that idea, teaches about satya, with the understanding the highest knowledge is the form of Vishnu. The pupil being taught that Vishnu is the best, and desiring to learn the nature of Vishnu's form and method of his worship, requests that he also should become an ativadi of Vishnu, with the words soham bhagavas satyen na tivadani. Chandogya Upanishad 7.26.1. Wow, 90 chapters later.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of talk in between. So in other words, the teacher will teach what the student is interested to know. But at the same time, that doesn't mean he necessarily leaves it there. He'll indicate that there's something higher. Now, if the student doesn't catch that, that's another thing. Does that make sense?
So it's a relationship.
Yeah.
The student shows the interest. And
yes, then it's there. But it's not that he doesn't throw out that there's something higher. It's not that he just ends there. But it doesn't mean that he teaches it to someone. So someone who doesn't want to know, you don't teach it to. Right? That's the basic principle. So that's why when in preaching, you're looking for those who are the innocent. Because they're open to knowing. Either they've shown an interest or they can be made to have an interest. But those who are opposed to the concept, then you don't. You just be pleasant and nice and... go talk to someone else. Yes?
This principle is applied to kids also?
Kids also. Means, let's say, depends upon which aspect you're talking about. If they're 12 and they want to know about quantum physics, then yes, you do teach it to them. But if it's you know, time to clean their room and they don't want to know that body of knowledge, then no, that's something that's... So there's what you have to do and there's what you could do.
So basics you have to do?
Yeah, means what is your occupational duties, those you have to do, and then if you have beyond that. So ultimately the nature of the soul is to serve Krishna, so that element has to be there. But it's a matter of moving at a pace where that living entity can appreciate it. So. So, in other words, the things that are supposed to be done, that must be done. And then things that are switching from the material to the spiritual platform, that's where then you take it at the speed where they can appreciate it. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like they have to clean their room, but if they don't want to chant, they don't chant. But they can't be a nonsense. In other words, you have to be properly behaved, and then if you appreciate the spiritual, then you move with that. But there's no question of it being blurred. That's the modern, like we said, mode of passion, so that no one wants to. So behave, kids can behave badly, just like, oh, they don't have to chant, they don't have to behave like a human either. No, they have to behave like a human. Humans are supposed to chant. See, I was slow down right there.
Yeah.
Oh, you see now he speeds up. It was really fast. Slow down.
Well, that's where they are.
And if you think that they chant, but they don't want to do something, that is their occupational duties.
Then you give them that option. You can strive from there. Okay, they don't want to clean their room, then sit down here in front of the deities and chant. That would take you 45 minutes to clean your room, so sit here and chant for 45 minutes.
Who's going to clean?
Yes.
The point is that one is not cleaning because one doesn't appreciate the position of cleanliness because of impurity. If one chants, then one will appreciate that. But it's like this. If you had two options, one, your child chants but doesn't clean the room and you clean it, or they clean the room and don't. Yeah, okay. We don't even have to finish the exam. Right? Because as they get purified, then that service attitude will be there, then they'll want to do. That's why the only solution to material problems is actually devotional. Sometimes, oh, but that's just spiritual. What about some real? No, there is no real on the material platform. It's illusion. So more illusion is going to make the illusion go away. That's like washing your hands with blood to get rid of the blood stains. So that's the example, right? So is the only way to clear illusion is through, you know, in this case, satya. Yeah. One cannot say that the word Atma refers to the jiva accompanied by prana, using the argument that the word Atma is mentioned at the beginning and also at the end. The word Atma applies etymologically, all-pervading, primarily to the Lord, not to the jiva. Later also, because otherwise if you apply to the jiva, it means that there's many, so that means it's not you. And so since this is about one becoming self-realized, then it can't be applied. Right? In another verse, Krishna says that living entities are all-pervading, just means there's so many of them. You know, like sand on the beach. But the point is that's generic. It's not about an individual soul. So if you're talking about self-realization, that perspective won't be of any value. So,
etymologically means according to the dictionary?
Yeah, etymologically means according to its root, where it comes from. So the point of Atma being here, if we go etymologically, it means all-pervading. Yes. You know, it's just like the soul is all-pervading within the body. You know, but that only understanding that aspect, then that's what meant before, is that's small, or, you know, it's not a great understanding. It's greater than those who don't understand that, who don't even know the soul's there. But it's not as great as one who understands it's the Lord's energy, and therefore it's by the Lord's grace the soul is there. But he only pervades one body, but the Lord pervades all bodies. Therefore, even though we can say it's okay, he's all-pervading, but his all-pervadingness is limited, while the Lord's is unlimited. So therefore, Atma, in this case, primary is focused on the Lord. Yeah. Later it also said, Atmana prana, the jiva arises from Atma. Chandogya Upanishad 7.26.1. So that's the point also. If the jiva is coming from Atma, then it can't be talking about the jiva. Because it's made a distinction, just like it made a distinction between prana and satya. So they can't be the same. Accepting that Bhuma means Vishnu, there is harmony with the statement. Bhuma exists where nothing else can be seen. Right? So even when you go beyond, into the avyakta, then still the Lord is who can be seen.
Right? So we see we go back to the actually the simplest understanding without adding unnecessarily.
Yes, because that's the point, is that that's why it's considered, means if something's more sophisticated, it's considered better. Unfortunately, nowadays, even if it's more complicated, it's considered better. But the point is, the simple is the most direct. That's the original. Then you expand. So since they're taking, since the platform of gyan means that you're going to be distracted by the intelligence, so therefore any application of intelligence seems superior to other things. I'm using intelligence, whether it's applied or not, or action is performed or not, or results are gained or not, that doesn't matter. Intelligence is being used at superior position. So that's a material attachment.
We see a value in intelligence on its own.
Yes, like that. Intelligence becomes its own. Yeah. So that's the yes. So then you're trying to show that, no, and you're going beyond that, whereas beyond what can be seen by intelligence and all that. Yes. That's the Lord. That's Bhuma.
not giving up intelligence, but using it in the Lord's life.
Yes. So then, because otherwise you see is that at the one point is that if it's about sleep and they're using that as a thing, that unconscious state, who wants to be in that unconscious state? And they consider that to be, you know, the perfection of philosophers.
Sometimes we want to be.
That's yeah. another thing.
I'm thinking of the weekend.
Buddhists.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because otherwise you generally think about liberation and knowledge and all those kind of things.
Yeah.
But here it's just about that ananda. It just means then that nothingness, that's where ananda will be experienced. But then the point is if you're going to experience it, you have to be an individual.
You have to be there.
Yeah. But and so if you just merge and you're not an individual, how will you understand that you're happy? Right. Yes.
Yatta Vasudeva is always present, even if the jiva is not conscious.
Yes, Vasudeva is always present. Yeah, yes.
At what point does one understand to make that switch from being used to seeing anything indirect to the direct? Because by habit, perhaps we are used to seeing things indirectly. At what point do we make that switch?
When we're interested. So when we're interested, then we'll endeavor. And then, as in all things, then if the Lord's pleased, then the results will come. But it's a matter of understanding that it's there. That's why it's said that someone hearing about these levels, that's not considered realized, right? It's when you make that endeavor to understand that and apply it in your life, then you can say the person is Atibhadi. But otherwise, then it's not what's not considered Atibhadi. It's just you've heard that it's there. Does that make sense? So if I know the definitions, I know like that, that's not considered knowledge. Like just like I may be able to present something that, okay, this should happen, this and that, so many things, but then the problem comes is that's not actually a knower. He knows the things. When he understands how to apply it, he thinks like that. That's how he sees. That, then you say, that's Atibhadi. Right? Yeah. Does that make sense? But, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Accepting
that Bhuma means Vishnu, there's harmony with the statement Bhuma exists where nothing else can be seen. This defeats the idea that Bhuma means the jiva. When one experiences the Lord, the experiencer, completely absorbed in him, cannot see or hear anything else. Right? So just being absorbed in the Lord, one is not interested in anything beyond that. That's the point. So that's what we'll see. This is the, you know, the tattva aspect of it. But then we see when it's applied in devotion, then the devotees like in Vrindavan and Braj, then they're always absorbed in the Lord. That's their position. So that's what it means that they're the greatest, you know, knowers of the Veda. Does that make sense? Where's all the technical knowledge? The technical knowledge is simply to get you to this point. They're at that point. So then what's the...
Where is it that says that someone who chants Hare Krishna has understood all the Vedas?
Yes, because otherwise then why would you be chanting? Why do you take up the chanting process?
They were hutus. The Kapila Deva.
Oh, Deva Hutu Nika. Okay. Says the happiness experienced during sleep is meager. It is ridiculous to say that the jiva in deep sleep is what is referred to by the term bhuma, because saying that that's ananda, like that. So that's not there. You know. This bhuma refers to Vishnu alone, because that's actually the source. Because you're not actually... It may be experienced, but you can't say that that's the jiva, because it was you experienced sleep. You didn't experience yourself. Like that, yeah. Bhagavad verse reference. The Upanishadic term Bhuman, the fullness, means the Supreme Lord Vishnu. All of the living entities are his servants and are dependent upon him. Srimad Bhagavatam 8:23-17. Lord Vishnu, I must nonetheless act in obedience to your order, because obeying your order is most auspicious and is the first duty of everyone. Because he is complete. Everything connected with him is complete. So we, being part, right? Therefore, when we connect to that complete, that makes our completeness. Right? But because he can do that with everyone, therefore he is the fullness. Sutra 1 through 9. Dharmo papate cha. Dharma, qualities, upapate, because of the appropriateness, cha, and. Bhuma refers to Vishnu because of the evidence. Qualities appropriate to Vishnu are mentioned in the text. Sutra Prakashika. The qualities described here to the Bhuma in the Vedic literatures are suitable only for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, and not for prana or anyone else. Sri Govinda Basya. Dharmo papatescha. And also because the qualities described here can be ascribed to the Supreme Personality of Godhead only. The qualities mentioned in relation to Bhuma are applicable to the Supreme Brahman and no one else. Yo vai Bhuma tad amritam. He who is Bhuma is immortal. Chandogya Upanishad 7:24-1. This shows that the Lord is naturally eternal. Right? So the jiva can be conditioned or in a constitutional position. Right? So that means that one could say, no, but when he comes to that platform, then he will be immortal. But the point is where, what is the source of this immortalness? Right? Because we're not in control of being in the position of immortal and mortal. That's controlled by the laws of nature. Who controls those laws? The Lord. So therefore, that immortalness may be there in quality, but not in quantity. And since the word Bhuman is fullness, then we can say, so it's not connected. But fullness and immortal both match Brahman. Right? So we see is that the confusion comes up because these can be applied to the jiva in limited fashion. Right, you know, that was the point. The point was made that the previous points that Vedanta Sutra is defining are those that are generally obviously taken as the Lord. Well, and these you can of course make anything into anything, but these are terms that are generally accepted as the Supreme, or as Brahman. Now it's dealing with terms that are used in different ways, so therefore we might mistake what it is. So then using that mistaken point in connection with the verse, then they can come up with a different philosophy. Right? So here we're showing is no, it means this particular thing.
So we can also see from this that when you have problems in this area, intelligence is applied, but it's still under the jurisdiction of the mind.
Yes, because there's an attachment and why we want it to work that way. Not that points that one doesn't make aren't correct, but the conclusion is wrong. So you're trying to get to that, to the conclusion.
Sa Bhagavata Kashmin Pratishta Iti Sve Mahim Ni.
What is the basis of Bhumna? He is fixed in his own glory. Right? Because that otherwise that comes, okay, well, what's the source of Bhumna? No. He is fixed in his own glory. Right? Okay. So, Chandogya Upanishad 7:24-1. This indicates a person who has no other shelter than himself, being independent. Right, because the jiva is not his own basis. He alone is thus the shelter of everything else. Atmatah pranaha. From him arises the jiva. This indicates that he is the cause of everything. Bhagavatam verse reference. The attributes of the Bhuman revealed in scripture apply only to the original person. Srimad Bhagavatam 9:10-14. O all-pervading supreme person, Bhuman, we are dull-minded and did not understand who you are, but now we understand that you are the supreme person, the master of the entire universe, the unchanging and original personality of Godhead, Adi Purusham. The demigods are infatuated with the mode of goodness, the Prajapatis with the mode of passion, and the Lord of Ghosts with the mode of ignorance. But you are the master of all these qualities. Right? So everyone has their portion of that that they're connected to. But Vishnu, being all-pervading, that he is connected, he is the Lord of all of this. Right? But he is uncontrolled by it. That then applies the definition of independent. Because otherwise you can say, oh, but these different personalities, they're in charge of the different things. But they're not, independent. They're dependent upon Lord Vishnu. Okay, Adikarana 3, the imperishable. Aksharadikaranam. Sutra reference 1:3, 10-12. Adikarana Prakashika. Adikarana 3 teaches that the Akshara, the imperishable one, spoken of in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, is Brahman. Summary of Adikarana 3. 1. Vishaya. The Brihadaranyaka Upanishad says, in what is the sky woven? He said, O Gargi, the Brahmanas say it is woven in the eternal. The eternal, Akshara, is not large, not small, not short, not tall, not red, not liquid, and without shade. Right, so we'll take the sky, we'll just take it as there, and it's everything's there. But what is that woven into? How is that held together? What is the support of that? Right, we generally don't think of these things.
We don't even go there.
Yeah, so that's what it means while, you know, just even... So that's the point of being thoughtful. Right? So this is the position. So the Shamshai is the Akshara, eternal, here, Pradhan, Jiva, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mm-hmm. Purvapaksha. The word Akshara here may denote any of the three. The meaning is ambiguous. Right? Why would it be ambiguous? Because they would actually like to be that. Yeah. Okay. Like, what is it? I am that, right? It's a Mahavakya. So.
Yes.
4. Siddhanta. The conclusion follows. Aksharam am bharanta dritehe. The word akshara here refers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because the akshara is described as the resting place of all the elements, beginning with the grossest and culminating in the sky. Mm-hmm. Right, so everything is situated in the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? Because otherwise that has to rest somewhere. Mm-hmm. Yes.
On what basis they would say it refers to Jiva?
Because even Jiva is Akshara, imperishable, as a soul.
Yeah. Okay. That's what we're saying, is that these terms are interchangeable. Okay. So therefore, knowing the context and what's being discussed, then you can see actually what it's talking about. But then, in this case, then they're not seeing like that. Because the point is, they want to make it that they are eternal. You know, they're the Brahman. So that's why they're not... That's why they're holding on to this point of not giving up. So you can see they're very determined, right? All you do is sit around and think all day. You can be very focused. Right? You know, hence, what do you call it? You know, like a Star Trek nerds. They can sit around and talk about some little insignificant point about why this one did this and if they did that and all these different things here, but you know, like that. So that's what they're doing, but in the case of transcendence.
They just speak Klingon instead of Sanskrit.
Yes, that's all. But otherwise, these are, you know, how you say, liberation nerds.
The original nerds?
Yeah, you probably could say the original nerds.
Ati
nerds. Ati nerds. Ati nerdies. Okay. Sutra 1310. Aksharam am paranta dritehe. Aksharam, the eternal, ambara, with sky, anta, at the end, dritehe, because of being the support. Akshara refers to Brahman because Brahman supports everything up to ether. Sutra Prakashika. This sutra attempts to deduce the meaning of the term akshara mentioned in the Vishaya Vakya, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 3:8, 7-8. So it's still about this same Vishaya Vakya, right? The same verse. So it's reference, what it's talking about when it says akshara, what it means, right? Not something else. Right? So in other places it may refer to the jiva's akshara, but not in this verse. Does it mean prana, the jiva, or Brahman? Pradhan. In order to prove...
Pradhan.
Oh, yes, Pradhan. In order to prove that it refers to Brahman, the Sutrakara appeals to a subsequent passage from the same section, which states that akshara is the support of ether. It is the resting place of all the elements, beginning with the grossest and culminating in the sky. Akshara literally means eternal or imperishable. Hence, ether, along with other material elements, merged back into akshara at the time of dissolution. Right? So existence means that sky has to rest on existence. So you have the unlimited sky or space. But what does space rest on? It has to rest on existence. Right? So that's the point. So therefore, its manifestation as sky then goes just back into pradhan, that rests on akshara, or on existence. The Sutrakara argues that this can refer only to Brahman, not to jiva or pradhana. Sri Govinda Bhashya. Vishaya. It is stated in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 3:8-7-8. In what is this akshara woven? O Gargi, the Brahmanas say that this akshara is not big or small. It is not short or long. It is without blood, without fat, and without shadow. Shamshaya, this is the doubt. Is this akshara the pradhan, the jiva, or Brahman? Purvapaksha, among the three, none of them are clearly defined because the word akshara is used for all three. Right, so they're just taking other general context,
yes,
but they're not. But in this connection,
yes,
then it's being very specific, because otherwise these qualities don't refer to pradhan or jiva because they're not the support. Because even if you're saying pradhan, but if you technically understand Brahman, Brahman has to be the support of pradhan, so it can't be pradhan. And the jiva, if that's an illusion, or if it exists, in any case, it's an extension connected with Brahman, so its existence is based on Brahman, because you're taking Brahman and covering that with illusion, you get a jiva, or you take, or at the same time as illusion comes from the jiva, thinking that they're not Brahman. So how that works, then they have more, you know, you think we have a problem with, you know, how do we fall into the material world, try to work this one out, right?
You know,
so,
huh? Yeah, get that one.
Yeah. So, therefore, it can't refer to those. But they're taking out of the context into others, because, so in other words, you see what they're doing? They're just arguing words. They're not trying to understand what's the meaning being made.
Prabhupada would very often say, just try to understand.
Yes, try to understand.
Because that when people are actually trying to not understand.
Yes. You know,
because it somehow goes against their attachments.
That their attachments or the word, because they, if you use a word in a particular way, you know, it's just like, let's say, the word party, okay, means you get together with friends and go crazy and, you know, whatever is the contemporary concept of what a party is. So then, when the temple commander says, okay, you know, we're going to, you know, put together a Sankirtan party.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah. You know, then you think it's this, and they're saying, like, no, we're getting the drums. Well, what do we need that for? We need to go out and get balloons. No, we're doing this. So then that's a problem, because they're attached to words used in a particular way. Siddhanta. Aksharam ambaranta dritehe. Akshara refers to Brahman because Brahman supports everything up to ether. Akshara is Brahman. Why? Because this Akshara supports everything, including Akash. According to the text, Tasmin, Nu, Kalav, Akshare, Garg, Yakasha, Otas, Cha, Protas, Cha. Otas, Cha, Protas, Cha. Okay. Oh, Gargi, the ether is woven in that Akash.
Akshara, you say
Akash. Oh, in that Akshara. Okay, the ether is woven in that Akshara. Okay. So, if we say as, but then ether goes back into Pradhan, okay, one could make that point. But then the point is Pradhan is taking up space. Where is that space coming from? So in other words, there must be space beyond Pradhan for Pradhan to even fit into it.
Why can't we say that Pradhan is that space? Is the original
Pradhan. But then we're saying Pradhan is unlimited. And then that would say it would give the qualities of Brahman. And so if we're saying that the material is limited, you know, is illusion, so there's a limitation, then it wouldn't fit the definition. You understand? So, but these are the mistakes that are made, that people make, and then like that, then they create their own philosophy. They take a word and then interpret it in a particular way. You know, it's just they only partially get there. Because a partial understanding won't be, due to its incompleteness, will give an incomplete result. So Krishna, because he's complete, therefore you know Krishna, then your understanding is complete. That's why if we only understand Brahman and Paramatma without Bhagavan, it's not a complete understanding. It is within the context of material consciousness. But when you understand that Brahman and Paramatma are features of Bhagavan, then that's complete. Then you can deal with them and you're on the transcendental platform. Okay? Yes.
The two subtle elements beyond ether, then they're part of Pradhan, the mind, sense,
ether. Yes, but those also then, how are they? What are they woven into? So, we generally take Akash because you can see it's big and great. Mind is then subtle beyond that. So we're just talking about it's the subtlest of the gross elements. And so the greatness of it, that's what we're looking at. So it'll be used. But otherwise you could use mind, you could use intel, you can use all these things. Because then you generally approach that from the other point of jnana, pranamoy, jnanamoy, vijnanamoy, like that. You'll generally use it on that platform. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so those three then are still part of the dharma and then.
Yeah, it's just like, it's the same thing, but you would use it in a different context. Just like, how you say? Let's say someone smiles, and the smile is very bright. Someone will go, "Nice teeth," right? Right? Okay. But what is the dentist going to refer to? They're going to be incisors, right? Doesn't sound as good.
Not really.
Yeah. Yes, but I'm just saying. So the context is therefore, because the context is different, you use different terminologies. So that's what becomes the confusion, is that the same terminologies can be used in different ways. But then, how you say? Because when we say nice teeth, we mean just the ones in the front. No one's looking at your molars in the back. But when a dentist says teeth, he means all 32. In a sense. So that's the thing, is that there'll be a difference in perspective. Does that make sense? Yeah. They could have used anything, but ether, because of its greatness, because anything else within ether has a limited form. But ether, you could say, you know, has that, means the whole universe is pervaded by ether. It's sitting in ether. But the where mind is manifest, where intelligence is manifest, where earth is manifest, those will be in specific places. But because they're all over the place, you can say in that way they're everywhere. But ether, you could say, is the most of that space, because everything has to sit in space, so even the mind and this and that. But at the same time as then pradhan, which it, ether is an element of, still has to sit in space, and it's not its own support. So that means then there is a support beyond the material. So there's spiritual space. So that's Brahman. Right? So it means here we call it ether, but in the spiritual world, that's Brahman. So the ether here is based on Brahman. But we don't see that Brahman. We only see the ether. Right? And even that is confusing, because your greatest, you know, intellectuals, they can't define time and space, because it's the Lord. Because actually, He is. That's why then you can also be, He is Akash. Right?
If Brahma is in the five elements, then is the adhikarana, like manas or intelligence, and is that on the... Is that relative to the platform of Vasudeva Sattva?
If it's relevant, if you are on that platform of not being bodily conscious, so therefore the liberated living entities or those who are in the primary creation, then they will see from that point, but because of material desire, then those who are actually liberated by seeing the Lord will go to the transcendental realm, and those who aren't, they will come into the material world. So all, you know, all those who maintain that intellectual platform will be your jnanis. Those who don't will be your karmis. But those who can always see in that way, they're the residents of the spiritual world. They're the devotees.
Pretty good.
Okay.
But you're saying that everything rests on the space.
Everything rests.
Rest is resting in the space. And when we speak of pradhan and mahat, so the intermediate stage is avyakta. So avyakta is resting on pradhan, basically.
Yes, because avyakta just means you have all the 24 elements homogeneously merged. That's pradhan.
That's pradhan.
When those elements are separated, but the individual atoms of earth are not interactive with each other, that's avyakta, because nothing's manifest. It's just separated. Right? It means the 24 elements are separated into 24 elements, but they're not interactive with each other. So only when now they are imbued by the Lord that He enters it as that attractive feature so that they can combine, that you get mahat.
So avyakta is a part of pradhan, so.
Avyakta is the stage between pradhan and mahatattva, because pradhan mahatattva is made out of pradhan also. But you know what I'm saying? So it's you would say it's part of the creation, because pradhan just sits there on its own. It's only because of the Lord's influence that you get avyakta. It's not that by pradhan's influence you get avyakta. So you wouldn't say it's part of pradhan. You would say it's part of the Lord's creation. Okay. Bhagavatam verse reference. Upanishadic term, akshara, the infallible, refers to the Supreme Lord because He is the eternal support of even the most subtle stage of the cosmic manifestation. Srimad Bhagavatam 8:3, 20-21. Unalloyed devotees who have no desire other than to serve the Lord worship Him in full surrender and always hear and chant about His activities, which are most wonderful and auspicious. Thus they always merge in an ocean of transcendental bliss. Such devotees never ask the Lord for any benediction. I, however, am in danger. Thus I pray to that Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is eternally existing, Aksharam, who is invisible, who is the Lord of all great personalities, such as Brahma, and who is available only by transcendental bhakti. Being extremely subtle, he is beyond the reach of my senses and transcendental to all external realization. He is unlimited. He is the original cause, and he is completely full in everything. I offer my obeisances unto him. Right, so this point is that he's the basis of everything, and we see him alone in our perception of everything. Right? So everything is connected to him in some way or another. Right? But in this case, then we see is that seeing that on that personal platform, on the Bhagavan platform, then that this is the best position. But you can see is that from that, we'll take this as just, yeah, this is one of those that we've always heard prayers. But this is technically what it's explaining.
Yeah. That's the thing that takes a little while to see that those prayers actually mean something.
Yeah.
It's not just the Lord is nice.
No, it's just all that is there. And so what Prabhupada talks about, then that's not just some common kind of thing. Because why would that come up? Because of our attachment to words or names, right? So in this case, where names mean something specific that we therefore have a particular attachment to for our own benefit, that's your lower stage of understanding. So we're functioning in that world of names. Generally, much of the time you see doubts come up because of not understanding the definition of the names. We say, Aksha, what does that mean? Right? So Bhuma, but it can mean this, it can mean that. So why would I want to use it in a different context? Because it's the benefit I get. So that means I'm attached to the benefits I get. That means I'm attached to the world of names. Right? Or I'm attached to the world of no names, which is its name is the world of no names. So I'm still in the same world. It just sounds better. Going through the gate of no gate sounds better than just you went through the gate. Yeah, everybody goes through the gate. So, but the gate of no gate. Now that, okay.
So is this a problem in Brahman understanding or Paramatma understanding?
Both will have that problem. Because if you don't see these two connected with Bhagavan, where's Paramatma realization going to get you to? Back to Brahman.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So only if you see it in connection with Bhagavan, then you move forward into bhakti. So that's what he meant. It's only through bhakti, who is available only by transcendental bhakti yoga. Right? Transcendental bhakti yoga. That means free from karma and gyan. Like that. So pure devotion is how the Lord is available, and anything else he's not. So therefore, the gyanis are working on the principle, oh, so hard to get to that position. The devotees are talking about this is the position in which we serve the Lord. Does that make sense? That's why we say the Vaishnavas are the highest of all the positions of the Brahminical position, because they're already starting from the platform of eternity and then moving forward into Kriya and Icha Shaktis. While for the Jnanis, then that knowledge or that existence, that's the goal they're trying to get to. You know what I'm saying? It's just like the person's goal is to get to the bus stand, but once he gets to the bus stand, that's all he does. Right? But for the traveler, then you're at the bus stand because that's where you catch the buses from. So the bus stand's not a goal. It's applying that position. Does that make sense? So that's why devotees are the highest Brahmins. Then within devotees, then there's great age, according to their understanding or realization. Right? So this, where you see the Lord as a person, this is your highest understanding of Bhuman. Okay. So, there's some. Yeah. Okay. 7:12:29-30. The mind, along with all material desires, should be merged in the moon demigod. All the subject matters of intelligence, along with the intelligence itself, should be placed in Lord Brahma. false ego, which is under the influence of the material modes of nature, and which induces one to think, I am this body and everything connected with this body is mine, should be merged along with material activities in Rudra, the predominating deity of false ego. Material consciousness, along with the goal of thought, should be merged in the individual living being, right? Because it's the living entity's consciousness that is polluted, so you want to take that back to the living entity. Right? In other words, you're taking everything back to its source, so then you get rid of that material variety, right, that we're attracted to. So that's what you're giving up. Mm-hmm. And so in this case, then you're moving this back to the soul. Then if it's the soul, then what's the nature of the soul?
The adhikarana is internal and external.
It's applied to both. Like that. The adhikarana means that you're following a path of logic that you're going to contemplate and you're going to apply. So you always have to do both. Okay, that one.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaurapriya.